Getting there on time just isn't good enough. Traffic and weather on the 10s with Wills and Snyder in the morning on WTAM 1100, Cleveland's news radio.
You get up in the morning and right away get on the scale. What's that number really mean? And how accurate is that number? You're thinking about your health all the time. Well, your health is made up of numbers, of course. Matt Granite, Channel 3's Morning News. Will's Ways to Save is in. I checked the video, WTAM.com, keyword safe. You came across, and I saw the pro showing this thing off, this scale really tells you the important stuff, right?
It's like getting a mini doctor's checkup or a physical every time you step on the scale. And with today being National Wear Red Day for heart health, for women, for anyone, for that matter, I figured this would be a pretty good tie-in. And the reason I'm excited, as you said, it's an arbitrary number. And I want to work against the scale for a second. I've heard my wife say this many times. Oh, no, I probably shouldn't have that piece of pizza. You know what? Maybe you can. Maybe when you get onto the scale, that arbitrary number you keep looking at doesn't really mean anything. Maybe you have less body fat. Maybe your body weight index is better than you think. Or she's pregnant, so it can measure things like your water weight, your hydration levels tied to many other factors that you see on the scale. You get a readout, and if any of our listeners right now kind of given up on the New Year's resolution, if you just need a little bit of help, a little bit of step or pep in the right direction, this is the most awesome way to chart your health goals. You step on the scale, and then in seconds, it sends a reading to your smartphone or a tablet very securely, and it shows you where you stand, your goals, and you can actually learn all of these other heart health factors every time you step on.
Good reminders, and as you say, you can kind of track yourself, and hey, you want to every day, once a week, every other day, however you want it, to track yourself, and you're always learning too. That's good.
Yeah, for me, a lot of us, and you might be this way too, when you get your annual physical, there are other factors measured.
Sure.
When you go to a gym before you sign up for a membership, they measure something else. This kind of ties both together to the point where you have that information at your disposal. Sometimes it's really just nice to know what's going on inside your body, even if you're not looking to lose weight.
Good stuff. It's a WTAM.com keyword save. It is a excellent smart scale. By the way, get you out of here. Patriots, Eagles, who you got Sunday night?
I'm going Eagles all the way.
Matt Granite, watch him on 3 back here same time Monday morning. Good pick. Thanks, pal.
Awesome.
Mike Snyder Sports, mornings at 15 and 45 past. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bill. Cavaliers believe they took a step in the right direction defensively when they beat the Heat 91-89. Well, they'll really find out for sure tomorrow when they host the Houston Rockets. Rockets beat the Spurs last night 102-91. They've won 3 in a row. They're 37-13 and feature James Harden, who had a 60-point triple-double the other night. Cavs and Rockets with an 8:30 tip tomorrow night. Hopefully, Cavs can reverse their trend of play in nationally televised games. In games played on national TV in January, Cavaliers were 0-7. Now, there's been a lot of talk about that ESPN story that if the Warriors really wanted to, they could actually find a way to fit LeBron James onto their roster next summer when he becomes a free agent. When asked about that, though, Kevin Durant called it pure...
But, you know... In this league, you know, just like a couple years ago, me coming here, nobody would have thought that. It's part of me as a basketball player that's just like, let's just worry about basketball. And then on the other side, we know this is a business as well.
Yeah, and so much of the NBA is not about basketball. It's about stuff and speculation and social media and all of that. That all goes into it. A lot of talk there with that story. It'll be interesting to see if LeBron has anything to say about that today. Also of note, NBA last night, Blake Griffin had a very nice debut as a Detroit Piston. He scored 24 points, 10 rebounds. Pistons beat the Grizzlies by a score of 104-102. And again, we're less than a week away from the trade deadline. Stay tuned. College basketball. Hey, a great win for Cleveland State last night. Vikings shocked Horizon League leader Wright State 77-74. Great win for CSU. At the Super Bowl, the news yesterday was Rob Gronkowski cleared to play Sunday night after being in the concussion protocol. Was Gronk ever in doubt that he'd be ready?
I knew I was going to be playing the whole time. Just obviously being cautious too. I didn't want to jump right into it right away. I think we did the process very well with the training staff here. And the doctors that we had, I think they did a great job in preparing me to get back. Just happy to be back out there with the boys.
Now the Patriots are the favorites, of course, that the underdog Eagles are ready, says their coach Doug Peterson.
You just tell them, say, listen, you're ready to go. You know, you just go cut it loose, play like you have been all season long, and we'll see what happens, you know, Sunday afternoon.
What a job he has done with that Philadelphia team. I still like the Patriots, though. to be celebrating once again by the end of the night on Sunday. Hockey, Monsters 3, Grand Rapids 2. Teams do it again tonight at the Q. You can hear it on 99.1 FM. And coming up at 5:45, what does Gronk mean to Brady? We'll hear from Tom about that in sports. Home of the Indians and the Cavs, Mike Snyder, News Radio WTAM 1100.
Let's talk some Super Bowl. Bring in Bill Zimfer this morning on News Radio WTAM 1100. Hi, Bill.
Good morning, Bill.
I guess a shock breaking news, Gronk is going to play. Everybody's just so totally surprised, I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't think for a minute Jim Schwartz, the defensive coordinator of the Eagles, was thinking that Gronkowski would not play. His defensive game plan certainly centers around Gronk.
So much noise around the Super Bowl, the big party. Bill, you just won a good game, though, right?
Yeah, and I think we're going to get one, Bill. These are two teams that don't give up a whole lot of points. They're in the top five in points allowed this season, even though the Patriots do give up some yardage defensively. I think we should have a competitive game. Of course, you never know. Turnovers play a big part. But just looking at the two teams and the way they play defense, this should be very interesting, and I think a close game.
You know, Bill, you look at that, right, the defensive side. We always think offense. Of course, all eyes on the quarterbacks. Nick Foles is quite a story, isn't he?
Boy, he sure is, Mike. I'll tell you what. This is a guy who was ready to retire a couple of years ago, and he was plucked out of nowhere by Doug Peterson before the season started. Ended up starting when Carson Wentz went down, and just played fantastic 2 weeks ago in the championship game against Minnesota. And one thing he really does well, and you're going to hear a lot about this Sunday, is RPOs, run-pass options. The Eagles do that more than any team in the league, where Foles will come up to the line and then decide whether it's going to be a run or pass, depending on what kind of coverage he sees. And it'll be a very good chess match going on here between Matt Patricia and Bill Belichick and the offensive coaches Frank Reich and Doug Peterson of the Eagles, just to see how they're going to handle those run-pass options. You can do it with man-to-man. You can disguise your coverages, and that's going to be one of the goals of the defense of the Patriots. For the Eagles, it's all about pressure. Get pressure on Tom Brady. Eagles have been better at that than any other team this season, even without blitzing. They're one of the teams that blitzes a low amount of time, but they can still get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, Brady, well, no quarterback likes to get hit, but he's so good at evading that, isn't he, Bill?
Oh, man. He is one of those guys that can just slide around in the pocket and deliver the football. In fact, his quarterback rating, Mike, is higher at 95.5 under pressure than most quarterbacks are with nobody around him.
Who you got Sunday night, Zimfer?
I'll tell you what, my pick is going to go for the Eagles. I got the Eagles winning 23-20.
Billy Zimfer will check in Monday morning. I like it. Thanks, pal.
All right. See you guys.
Halftime, of course, Justin. He says Janet Jackson, Jay-Z, NSYNC, nor Chris Stapleton will not be special guests. He's keeping a list, I guess. They were asked, and he said, well, they're not going to be here. He said, it's just me. Might bring his kid up on stage.
And his son won't play football
his
either.
His son won't play football either, but he's there for the halftime show. We are spending money. Last year, Americans spent on the Super Bowl a lot. This year, it's expected to be $15.3 billion, almost $81 per fan. Now, they're averaging in everything. Food, beverages, and, you know, your neighbor that bought a TV. That's up over 8% from last year. Here's a stat. Come Monday, a lot of people, I guess, call in sick. According to a survey, 13.9 million will call in sick the day after the Super Bowl. It is the biggest sick day of the year.
Well, Camino's trying to put a drive together that they make, that we make it a holiday.
A holiday.
The day after the Super Bowl is the holiday, because there is so many people calling. Scooter, are you coming in Monday?
Oh, absolutely. I'll be here.
You'll be here?
Oh, yes. I don't know about other people in our staff, though. That's every day around
but
here.
But it's a... Camino thinks it should be a holiday.
Yeah. He would.
Camino needs another day not to work. I know, yeah. Timberlake will have the halftime show. Big deal, though, when it comes to security at a big event like this. Crime terrorism analyst Brad Garrett joins us on that part of the Super Bowl. Look, we saw here in Cleveland security when it comes to the RNC a couple of years ago. A big event, of course, the Super Bowl, similar as far as what the people in Minneapolis are going through.
Equal, if not even bigger. Keep in mind the football stadium is in town, so it creates the additional challenges of surrounding buildings, roads, etc. So that's one avenue. The Minneapolis police are smaller than many other departments that hold Super Bowls, so there's more feds, like 1,700 plus feds. Interesting number, 10,000 volunteers to be eyes and ears, just to walk around, not probably sworn folks. You see something, you know, you give the sworn folks a shout, and they come check it out. So You know, it's got all of the bells and whistles security-wise, from, you know, bomb-sniffing dogs to air sensors to you name it.
Brent, I would presume they would have been in there early, a couple years ago, probably when it was announced for Minneapolis. I mean, they've hosted huge events before, but there's a lot of planning, correct?
It is all 2 years. In other words, wherever it is next year, they started planning a year ago and on down the road. Yes, the coordination bill is the real key here. You think about the number of law enforcement agencies, city, county, state, federal. Everybody's in their lane about, you know, I'm sure the police there will do a lot of the traffic control, et cetera. The feds will control security and maybe the inner perimeter of the stadium itself. All of the vendors, think about that. They're going to have additional vetting to get in and out of the stadium. All of their food, all of their whatever they're selling, all has to be checked before it can come into the stadium. So it is a huge process.
Big event, big-time security, Brad Garrett's take on it. Thanks, Brad.
Take care, Bill.
Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com, joins us this morning to talk about our teams. Follow him on Twitter, Terry Pluto, graduate Benedictine, eight-time Ohio Sports Writer of the Year, and some great scribbles the other day about our Cavaliers. Let's start there. Hi, Terry.
Hello, Mr. Will.
You were scratching your head about some of these coaching moves. I'm scratching my head about the front office quote, not attributed to anyone, of course, but Cleveland.com saying that somebody in the front office, well, loves out. LeBron just needs to do more. And LeBron says, wait a minute. I'll do me. I can't do any more.
Yeah, I don't know about the front office quote or whatever, what to make of that. And I would like to see LeBron play better defense and some other things, but that's not the main problem they have going there, that's for sure.
No, well, LeBron needs to play better than he did this last month, but I don't know about doing more.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just play better. Yeah. You know, go back to being LeBron of late October, November, December. But doing more. And, by the way, that's a silly thing for anybody to say. And I would be surprised if somebody said that of way up in power. But, heck, I don't know what to think anymore about some stuff.
Yeah, I hear you, Terry. Sources, especially when it comes to the Cavaliers.
I really thought LeBron'd be suiting up for the Warriors this weekend anyway.
Well, there you go. There, I mean, that came out of nowhere yesterday.
And, you know, that's where it ought to go back.
Terry, you look at this team now, and I know in your point that about Isaiah Thomas starting, maybe
right,
coming off the bench, you know, it does seem to, when I look at it, I hear what you're saying. So I got to believe Lou's got a real reason that he's doing it this way.
I think he's just trying to see if they can make them play together pretty well. That's what it really is, just simply by doing it, because, you know, they don't practice that much because of the schedule and the age of the team. The problem is he's not playing well enough to start, and you have a guy who has a major hip injury coming back. You play him over 30 minutes in back-to-back games, and you wonder why he shoots 5 for 25?
Well, there's no question that it's rough to watch him right now, and they're trying to fast pedal this. We're less than a week away from the trade deadline. What do you think, Terry? Or just if you looked into a crystal ball, what do you think they'll try to do?
I think they'll try to, you know, they could go in a couple of different directions. Obviously, they could use some size with Kevin Love out because they needed that even before. Just try to get better, you know, get more young athletic. Some of the things that were bothering them before. I mean, in terms of what it means long-term for the franchise, I think LeBron's going to look at this and say, can you get this roster balanced out a little better? I mean, that is one of the decisions he will make about, quote, staying or going, is that, you know, you do have, this is a younger front office. It's not the David Griffin front office. And those guys still have to prove themselves, and their first trade may end up being very good. Maybe if that Brooklyn pick and they keep it and ends up being a really good player. But right now, in the short term, and with LeBron, everything short term, it's really been frustrating.
Houston tomorrow night should be a pretty good test, Mike Snyder, uh-huh. And then Orlando at Orlando Tuesday.
Well, right? We'll find out if they made any progress at all defensively tomorrow.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah, because they're going to really see some offense. Terry, I wanted to get your thoughts. The Browns this week, there was a lot of hope. I think maybe that they'd be able to get a deal done with Kansas City for Alex Smith. That obviously did not happen. Now Kirk Cousins is out there. What does your crystal ball tell you when you look ahead for the Browns and finding that veteran to bring on board?
My crystal ball starts wandering in the territory of Tyrod Taylor, Chase Daniels, A.J. McCarron. That's what it does, because the same problem they had with Alex Smith, which was partially he didn't want to come here, partially they didn't want to give him a four-year contract. And a big part, by the way, was they also, Washington was able to include a real Kendall Fuller, a young, excellent young defensive back, considered a first-round talent, who had four interceptions last year in that trade. You know, the Browns are in a tough spot. When you give people freedom, do you want to come to Cleveland where they're 1-31 or, you know, 4 and whatever, 47 or I forget, what doesn't matter what it was the last 4 years. You know the record.
Brian Hoyer, I think, mentioned yesterday that they've won 4 games since they benched him.
Exactly. You go, well, what do you really want to do? And the reason I mentioned Tyrod Taylor, he's kind of in the same situation as Smith. He's got a year left on the contract. So technically, you could probably trade him here. How about this? I'll say, not that Tyrod Taylor is great or good, but DeShone Kizer threw more interceptions in the red zone last year, 6, than Taylor threw all year.
And with that, we're gone. Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter, at Terry Pluto. Eagles or Patriots?
Bill probably wins. You know, it's just Cleveland.
Have a good weekend.
See ya.
Yeah, he talked a lot about Democrats not really helping with DACA, not going for his plan. He's been tweeting about it. He tweeted again last night about how he feels the Democrats are not reaching out to work with him on this plan. So the immigration issue continues to be a sticking point as the budget clock does tick down. I mean, we're 6 days away now. It's a week from yesterday that the government runs out of money. And when the president was speaking in West Virginia, a lot of Republicans there have been talking about yet another short-term spending bill. We're looking at another one said to extend funding, say, through March 22nd, although that date is not firm. So that would kick the can yet down the road again. But you've still got not only immigration, which it seems that it's playing less of a role than some other issues that they continue to have differences over. Really, defense spending is a big sticking point. And the conservative House Freedom Caucus is still saying, you know, they're not in favor of these short-term spending measures. But the head of that caucus group, Mark Meadows of North Carolina, said that maybe if they can get a big promise of significant military spending, they may yet support this short-term spending bill. Of course, Democrats, they may not. So we are in that same kind of Groundhog Day thing where we're talking about the potential for another government shutdown.
And this memo, I would presume, if indeed it says what Trump thinks he wants it to say on this whole FISA court issue, it'll be released at some point today.
Supposedly, a person aboard Air Force One yesterday said, a senior administration official said that he's probably going to hand it back over to Congress, probably without any of the redactions that, you know, the FBI is not happy. They've been asking for changes or for it not to be released at all. It could be up to the Congress now. And there's some speculation that because it's considered classified, that what they may end up doing, someone may actually read it from the floor of the House, which would then protect them from any prosecution because it's a crime to reveal government secrets. So that may happen. And now there is some reporting. Axios is reporting that there is concern in the White House. It may not have the punch that I think that the president may expect. And the Washington Post says that the chief of staff, John Kelly, has told the president it may not be as compelling as he's been led to believe. But, you know, that it's all that's today. All the headlines today, I think, will be about the memo if it indeed comes out like it's expected to. But meantime, you know, the budget's running out of money and you've got the immigration issue running out in March 5th. So a whole lot of things to be worried about in Congress right now.
Sharon Reid, get you out here on this. Patriots or Eagles? I know you're a Bills fan, so it's got to be tough.
You know, let me say Eagles just for the upset.
Have a good weekend.
You do the same thing.
Virgil Kane is my name, and I drove on the Danville train.
I don't want to get too heady, but I got to thinking this morning. Our buddy Greg Harris is in, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, Cleveland's Morning News with Wills and Snyder. Hi, pal.
Hey, good morning. Love to hear a little Night They Drove Old Dixie down to start the day.
You know what I was thinking? Seriously, we talk about, and the Rock Hall is a living, breathing museum. You are keeping track of the history and so much about culture. But it kind of dawned on me. We induct Joan Baez a year ago, and look at the year we had in the news with monuments. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what this song was singing about so many times, it just struck me. Because I mentioned that because I know you're kind of moving out the current exhibit, so you got to get there to see that because we got new ones coming in, right, Greg?
Absolutely. You know, we're still celebrating last year's class with Pearl Jam and with Joan Baez
ELO
and others.
And Yes and Tupac, yeah.
Yeah, but that's going to come down the next few weeks, and we're going to put in the new class, you know, this great class with Bon Jovi and the Moody Blues and Nina Simone and Rosetta Tharpe and the Cars. Every year we refresh. One of the big things we're doing this year is we're opening up for the first time. We're going to have a very large, large Hall of Fame, much like the bust room in Canton or the plaque room in Cooperstown. It'll be the defining feature of induction is being enshrined in this Hall of Fame.
You guys are doing a ton of work. I mean, the cafe, so many things you've been doing. It's almost like a construction zone the last year or two.
It is, but they've done a great job of sort of walling off an area,
yes,
doing the work, and then
yes,
opening it up. And what's really been fun is that we've been able to do all this without taking many things offline.
Right.
We just
right.
keep rolling ahead. This thing is going to look so incredible when we open it up in April. And then, frankly, construction is going to pause until we get through our summer season. We're going to go back at some other areas.
And, Greg, what can you tell us? As you mentioned, the induction ceremony will be here. A lot of great events are in store for us leading up to that, aren't there?
When it's here, we celebrate it for at least a week and maybe longer. There's going to be concerts. There's going to be live music. There's going to be bands coming by the museum doing things like book signings and special fan greetings. Those things are going to happen. And then we're going to dedicate this brand new Hall of Fame. It will be a huge part of the induction week and celebration week for all of Cleveland. We want Cleveland that week to feel like Minneapolis does right now for the Super Bowl.
Well, and again, that week, what else, people that want to be involved with, at this point, what can you share with us regarding that?
We can share that the new exhibits are going to be opened, that we're going to have, I think our PR group is going to roll out a much bigger thing with all of the details that's going to happen. But one of the keys is to get tickets for the induction. Be ready. They go on next week. They go on sale on the 6th for members, on the 8th for the general public. Mm. And then a few days after that, when the ceremony happens, it happens at Public Auditorium. If you're going to see it live, you're either at Public Auditorium or there's a simulcast that happens at the museum. There's a few thousand tickets to come over and watch it at the museum. And then that's the only two places to see it in the world live. Then the show gets edited, and a few weeks later is aired by HBO.
Greg Harris, CEO of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, with us. We're getting ready for just a tremendous week, 10-day, couple-week period, as you say, as we celebrate the new class. Between now and then, though, several other events. Before we get to the high school rock-off celebration, Black History Month, extremely important and recognized, too, at the Rock Hall, right?
It's a really important month for us. It's vital for the history of rock and roll, and we're going to have some featured bands. The Kinsmen Dazz Band is coming in on February 9th, but also we have we have some inductees coming to town from NWA. They're coming in to do some interviews and to share some of the demonstrations on how they make the sounds that define them. That's on February 7th. And there's other activities all month long, so check out rockhall.com. I know we're screening some films.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, those film screenings are going to continue all through the spring, and we have a spring film series that people may want to check out.
Yeah, I just saw, I was looking at it, so you got some really cool things like about the monkeys, things like that, right?
We go for breath with our film series, so there's films about Nina Simone, there's films about Link Wray and Native Americans who rocked the rock and roll world, and then one of our featured exhibits this spring is about rock and roll and television, and we're featuring the monkeys film.
Fantastic.
You go deep there, Mr.
Yeah,
Snyder.
Well, it caught my eye right there. That's
Mr. Prep. Now, we got some future maybe Hall of Famers. The Rock Off has been fun. We're up to, I think, the third round.
This Saturday night, the high school Rock Off, thanks to our friends at Live Nation and at Tri-C, is at the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. What's terrific is these bands, these students, they come from all over Northeast Ohio, frankly, as far away as Columbus and as far east as Erie. They converge here in Cleveland over a series of Saturday nights. They compete with each other, and then there's a final and there's some winners. Those winners are going to be on our stages during Hall of Fame Induction Week. They'll be performing for all the guests that come in from out of town. They'll also play on our summer stage in the summertime and share their talents with all their friends and neighbors.
Fantastic.
Tickets are easy for that. Come down and check it out. And if you have kids that are playing music, bring them down. It's inspirational.
Great. Yeah, great opportunity to bring them down and get them excited. So let's go, right? By the way, next week I have a conversation, 5 good minutes, with the 2014 class member John Oates. Has a new album, Arkansas. He goes back to the roots. of folk music. It is outstanding. And he'll join me next week, so we'll talk about that some. Greg, thank you, partner.
Hey, go Eagles, all right?
Oh, there we go. I was going to ask you. Every guest we have had on is going with the Eagles.
Yes, absolutely.
All right. Thanks, Greg. Yep. Follow up. Get more at the Rock Hall website. Cavs legend, member of the 1980 World Champion L.A. Lakers. Of course, on the Cavs radio network, he and John Michael will call the Cavs Rockets from the queue tomorrow night. Jim Chones joins us this morning. Hi, Jim.
Morning, Bill.
Mike Snyder, give me one more time. The official word just came down from the Cavs on love, or at least an update, huh?
Yeah, this is the first time we've gotten an official timeline from the Cavs regarding Kevin. No surgery, but he will be out right now approximately 8 weeks, as though they're going to treat and then rehab the non-displaced fracture in the left hand.
And, I get it, next man up, but there's been a lot of people wondering how Love's been playing all year. Well, Jim Jones, we now got to play without him, right?
Yeah, well, we're going to have to, and the thing about it is we do have the depth to do that, but you're still going to miss a possible 20-10 guy every night and a guy that stretches the defense. But I like the adjustments they made in the first game without Love, and I thought it was significant. I saw that they were a little bit quicker in their rotations with Crowder and whomever played that spot. And it also made us run a little bit easier. It looked like we got up and down the floor a lot easier. But I got to give Coach Lou credit for the combination he put on the floor at the end. You know, in our league, especially this season in particular, so many teams are talented. They have athleticism and quickness. And a lot of times you hear people make the comment the Cavs look like they were running in mud. And that may be true, but I think they figured out a way to slow these young teams down. And you know how you do it, guys? You try to match up physically, and I think we're doing a better job of it. I love everything Kevin Love has done for us, but Miami was in here to win a game, second night of a back-to-back for us, and we were able to put people on the floor consistently enough that could match up with them physically because they are very athletic. Hey, we won the game on the second night of a back-to-back, 91-89, really? We finally figured out how to play some defense based on our matchups.
Well, that is true. The defense on the final possession was just excellent, Jim. Just watching several replays of it, the Cavs were attached to each guy, and LeBron, of course, getting in the way of Joseph. But now you get ready for Houston, and now I think that we'll really see tomorrow if they have taken a step forward. Not they're going to hold Houston to 89, but this is a team that can flat out score, and they've got the league's leading scorer in James Harden. They're going to get a real test to see if they've made some progress tomorrow, aren't they?
Yeah, Mike, I agree with you. James Harden is one of those guys that they say scores easy. And there's only a few of those guys in our league. I mean, they can score anytime they want to. Doesn't make what circumstance or closing games. And he's probably the best at it this season in our league because he's just an unbelievable offensive talent. But I saw some stuff this morning, when they showed their victory. I forgot who they played.
They beat the Spurs last night.
Yeah, they beat the Spurs. The Spurs have been down. But the way they play is such a wide-open game. And people, sometimes we underestimate spacing, even though we talk about it all the time. But it's an unbelievable effect. When you have proper spacing, so many beautiful things can happen, because it gives you a chance to have some options. You can drive the lane, you can go ISO, you can dribble dish, or you can just get basic ball movement. And a lot of people underestimate the value of that. And nobody in our league spaces the floor better than Houston. So that small lineup that Lou found out at the end, that he used down the stretch where they could match up, that's going to be significant tomorrow night.
And then ongoing, as we see Isaiah Thomas there, he's playing through this, Jim. The good thing the other night, he made all 9 of his free throws, but he's still been unable to get that jumper going, hasn't he?
Well, yeah, it has. But Mike, we struggled for quite a while in that fourth quarter. I think we made one basket during one stretch and about 6 or 7 free throws. But people got to remember that's not such a drastic situation if you're making your free throws. When you're not making your free throws, I've always looked at it, if you're not making free throws because they're free and you worked for them, now you put yourself in a situation where it's just like a turnover and you give the other team a chance. But we made our free throws down the stretch, and that's what good teams do. They make their free throws. I think the Cavs made 29, guys, 29 free throws, because the field goal percentage is, what, around 35? you know, but when you're making free throws, it helps.
Cavs Rockets, 8:30 tomorrow night. Want to be there? Be listening at 8:45. Set you up with a pair of tickets. Jim Jones and John Michael will call tomorrow night here on News Radio, WTAM 1100, home of the Cavaliers. Jim, thanks, partner.
Thank you, guys.
Kevin Carr joins me, fatguys@themovies.com. If you've been to a flick lately, you've probably seen a preview for an interesting movie. Helen Mirren is in Winchester. First of all, wonderful actress.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, Helen Mirren's one of the acting royalty you've got out there, you know, probably under a Meryl Streep. And even right now, she's in an award movie out there called The Leisure Seeker, was nominated for a Golden Globe. So it's kind of odd seeing her show up at a horror movie in February, yeah. Which is actually, I think, kind of cool, because she does do some more fun options. You know, she was in the last Fast and Furious movie. She was in the movie Red, which was an action film. And so it's not the only time she's ever gone away from the award movies, but in this film, she plays Sarah Winchester, who was the heir to the Winchester repeating firearms fortune back in 1906. And in the story, the board of directors want to kind of get her declared mentally unfit to be able to run the company, because they want to get it out from under her. And so they bring in a doctor to hopefully give a diagnosis of not being of sound mind and body. And he goes out to the Winchester Mansion, which is this very famous haunted mansion out in San Jose that started out as just a smaller house that she just built upon, and out of guilt and for the people who were killed by the firearms. And she turns it into this bizarre, completely nonsensical mansion with weird geometry and doors that lead nowhere. An interesting mansion idea, but that's about it with the movie. I mean, she's great in it, but you know, there's not a whole lot of anything else to it beyond just the premise.
Jason Clark, that face that shows up once in a while, plays a psychologist in this thing. Is it scary? Is it just a decent movie? What is it?
Well, it's more of just a throwaway horror movie. Right now, we're in this. The horror movies tend to lean towards the movies like the ones that James Wan worked on, like Insidious and The Conjuring. So it's trying to build off of that, but it's also trying to build a bit of nostalgia from you know, those old Hammer horror movies with Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee back in the 60s. I think atmospherically it's there. There's just not as much of a story. I personally wasn't scared, because it's not exactly a gripping horror movie, but you know, hey, if you're not used to horror movies, you might be a little bit thrilled.
Good point about Helen Mirren. She just seems like an actress who, look, she looks at a script. I don't care if it's going to be successful. I just want to work and I want to go do something.
Yeah. I mean, there's nothing wrong. You don't have to do award films every single time out of the gate. You don't have to be expecting to get an Oscar nomination for everything you do. And she understands that, so that's kind of cool.
All right, Winchester out this weekend. Kevin Carr, fatguys@themovies.com. Eagles, Patriots, who you got?
Oh gosh, you know, I don't know. Let's go with the Eagles on this one.
The birds again. All right, Kevin. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.